There's something in the setup of the retreat that I appreciate so much. So we come to a place, often it's like this in the countryside, where there's beauty and nature. Folks are going to cook for us. There's no pressure in a way, there's nothing to do, we just do nothing. So there's warmth if we need warmth, there's a roof above our head, food is served 3 times a day, warm, beautiful colors. In a way, there's no challenge. It's like no challenge, it's just a big treat, or could be. There's this possibility, it's very, very simple. And yeah, we just sit for a few minutes silently together, you know. Then we go walk a little bit. You know, if we don't want to walk, it's fine. Nobody will say anything, or if we don't want to sit, we want to lay down, it's okay. So it's pretty relaxed in a way. And yet, somehow, the mind will, at least at some point in the day, at least once in the day, will do something really weird. Like it will create trouble. You know, where you could think, you know, there's the option to just appreciate and relax and experience peace. No, it'll start doubting you. You're not going to be able to do this. Sitting, walking is too much for you. Sitting, walking, no, you're not going to be able to do that. You know, breathing, sitting, walking, way too hard for you. Who do you think you are? You know, that you think you can breathe, you can sit, you can walk. You know, it'll be proven how bad you are, how lousy you are. You know, something like this. Or, you know, well, one of the things in the setup that I forgot to say is that we also wanted to be here. Like, it's one thing if it's imposed, but I think we wanted to be here. We might be questioning it now, but at some point, at least we wanted to be here. And so now we're here, and the mind at some point will do this really weird thing that it got what it wanted. Now it couldn't care less about it. It wants something else. Something that wants to be back home, you know, or somewhere else. Although it dreamed about this, got online at the right time to get it, or it was 36 on the wait list and finally squeezed in, you know. And then it'll do this to us. You know, it'll do this to itself. It'll start to want something else, like project on something else satisfaction. Or it will start rearranging. There's all kinds of things it can do. The creativity is endless. Like, oh, I wouldn't have set up the hall like this. There's a stage there. Like, you know, the food, I wouldn't serve the food like this. The rooms, I would have designed them differently. The schedule too, by the way. And if only it was that other teacher that I heard of, you know. And, you know, and then we'll just kind of manipulate and try to fix the, have an opinion, preferences about the... And so there's all kinds of things that like this will do. There's actually a short list of 5 that you know of. You know, maybe I'll name them because we'll probably encounter them or have today. So desire for something else. So when the mind could, you know, just be at peace, enjoy, appreciate, relax, I'm not even mentioning bliss, which is also apparently an option in human nature, you know. Yeah, there's a full range of beautiful qualities. then the mind will sometimes or often or will notice what it's up to, but it will create this desire for something else, resistance to what is, agitation around what is, or will be kind of very dull, will get very dull, like, it wanted this, it got this, but yet it won't be able to connect with it. Or doubt that I mentioned, it will start doubting, is that the right practice for me, am I able to do this at this point in my life, maybe later, maybe earlier, I could have, you know. And so these things might have very natural, actually no judgment, no blame, because there's nobody to blame. It's just natural stuff, natural human nature. So there's nobody to blame for that. It's just things that minds do. They do that. Minds do that. Will do this to themselves in a way. And so here we get to notice how it does that. And, you know, I just gave the list of five, but, you know, that includes comparing, you know, oh, she's so much better than, oh, is she a she? I don't know. But this person is so much better than me. Clearly, they're, you know, they're weak and I'm not. And everything they do keep proving that I'm that I'm not, you know. So that's why I enjoy retreat, because this is highlighted, you know. This, so, wow, this, what does this mind does that? Thank you to family, thank you to culture, thank you to capitalism, thank you to its own wild creativity. You know, it will create something, to some difficulty for itself. And yeah, part of what we do here is to notice this. But, you know, if it was just to suffer, then I would say, no, there's no point in going on retreat. If you're just going to suffer from these five or even more, you know, there's no point. The point is that the waking up, like the discovering what the mind does to itself, this is the point, you know, to actually become conscious of what's at play, what it's doing, you know, without judgment. That's mindfulness. It doesn't judge, it just reveals, oh, look at that, look at what it's doing to itself, you know, adding a layer of complication or complexity or difficulty, really. And so we have the chance here to notice this. And the silence tends to highlight these things, these patterns. And so it's very important not to make it too personal, because it's going to be very aggravating if we make it really personal, that I'm doing this, this is me doing this. No, this is what minds do when they're untrained, when they don't know better, when they... And one of the ways out is to actually note what it does, you know, how in nature it won't be able to connect, because it's obsessed with something about what will happen, what could happen, what, you know, what will I get out of this, or how it can, not consider what the beauty that is there, the calm that is there, not being able to feel it. It's inaccessible because so much agitation or so much preoccupation. We're preoccupied or under occupation. It's not available. So there's a lot of kind of bad news, you know, when we come here. We often call this the first insight in this path of insight, of understanding. We notice what the mind does. And the good side of this is, as we go on, we'll also notice the beautiful things that a mind can do, you know. And because of the silence, because of the sensitivity we develop, we'll be touched more deeply. That's also what we call vipassana. Deeper understanding, it means we'll be kind of almost shaken by the tendencies of our minds, the beautiful ones and the detrimental ones, you know. In life, with superficial attention, we just keep going with our habits, and we're not deeply touched by how the mind is behaving. But here, maybe we can notice more deeply, be moved, touched, right? By to notice what it does to itself, and that deeper knowledge, that deeper recognition. It's like being shaken, like, wow, look at that, that's dangerous what this mind is doing. Just following along any kind of desire for satisfaction, you know, like, oh, if I had that, that would be so much better. And like at some point we realize this is dangerous to use the mind in this way, you know, like it's not benign. It has an impact on the whole system. Yeah, and so it can be revealed along the way also, the beautiful mind. It's a particular kind of aesthetic. It's not the aesthetic of something beautiful outside. It's inner beauty, what the mind can do when it's kind, benevolent, quiet, attentive, curious. Come closer to somebody with something without judgments or expectations, or with candor, candidly, you know. And so there's many, many, I will say it like this, textures of the mind that we will encounter and get more familiar with, discover with the help of the queen, of the guard and the queen. You know, so with this more generous attention, we'll be able to feel what it feels like when there is patience, or when the mind is not contracting around something, an opinion or an expectation, or etc. When the mind relaxes a little bit around something, we'll be able to, we'll be impressed. Otherwise, we could not notice the value, the beauty of certain more subtle mind state, moments of mind, you know. And in this way, we'll be able to clarify in a felt way. It's not like we're going to get the list, you know, we go to a workshop, here's the list of beautiful qualities, and here's the list of detrimental qualities. This is not how we do it here. Here we soak in them. You know, we get to actually experience them enough to kind of get the discernment out, the juice out, the information out, the ouch out, or the, ah, wow, feels good. And sometimes it arises in our own mind, and sometimes it's we get porous and we get impressed by, you know, it could be very simple, somebody putting on their boots or closing the door gently, and we'll catch it because there's just a little bit more availability than when we're very preoccupied or habitual, because we're actually noticing, attending, being present. There's things that will happen here and there in nature. Nature is generous in this way. And in other human beings, we'll be touched, we'll be moved, there'll be transmission, will happen. We'll say, oh, this way of being. Well, you know, us being porous, we'll be able to collectively kind of develop, cultivate qualities and pass them along to each other as we're here. And we'll be able to try these, you know, like really like trying some clothing, you know, that you, let me put this on for a second, you know, and try that way of being, maybe that buoyancy of heart that we'll notice somewhere in the space, you know, oh, that buoyancy, like, oh, there may be another way than this heavy way that I carry stuff. Maybe there's another way possible. And it's okay if we just touch it for a moment, because we can be impressed. A moment is a lot for a sensitive mind, you know, for an attentive mind. Or if there is, as there often is, it would be, you know, it's totally natural, there would be some brokenness inside, you know, because of personal events, world events, maybe we'll discover that this, you know, that there may be another way to meet this pain, this heartache, maybe with care, with tenderness, rather than obsession or resistance, hatred, which are very, very, very natural, or denial, you know, that there might be another way to touch, hold something that is difficult. And I want to name this again because I think that's... So this maybe will turn out to be or wants to be a kind of an overview of, you know, what we're doing here a bit. Maybe some ways that this is unfolding, practice is unfolding. And... and something that I find remarkable in this practice, that it goes really far in this exploration, investigation. You know, one of the tendency that we have is to have everything refer back to a self. It's about me, my breath, my posture, my agitation, what will happen to me, what, you know, somebody does something, it seems to mean something about me. You know, why are they doing, you know, doing this to me? Why are they going so slow in the food line? They're doing this to me. It means something about me. I'm not going to get my lunch as quickly as I want. Or like this referring back to I, you know, this I-ing that happens. This is one of the things that can easily, probably for most people, will remain unquestioned. Yet here, that's something that I find remarkable in this practice, is we'll go as far as questioning this kind of assumption or habit or way of this way that we have organized life, you know, and like what's that about? And so here, by slowing down, by paying attention, we're going to be able to question that habit of I-making, you know? And maybe what if we were to find no one behind all this? Slight little mistake in perception. It all seems so personal. And maybe we could find that maybe there's nobody behind all that. What a joke. All these years of self-obsessing. taking it personal. Wow. Strange to hear, maybe. But there's potential there, there's something there. Anyway, that's partly why I'm here. That's a big part of why I'm here, because that's so funny to discover that it's really hard to find. This person I can keep referring to and thinking about and, you know, trying to control. And even not only control here, control what people think of this person. You know, I try to organize Pascal for everyone. Like, I want you to see Pascal like this. I want you to see everyone, this one to see Pascal like that. And everyone seems to have their own Pascal that they made up, you know. And I'm very busy trying to manage all these. Trying to send the right information out so they can correct the view. I'm good. Deserving, lovable. And so what we do here is really intriguing. We slow down, we pay attention, and we could call this deconstruction. I think partly that's what we're doing. We're deconstructing this big self, me, all happening to me, and we're saying, well, let's break it down in little moments. So first we'll do this, and we'll have to do it a lot, is let go of the timeline view. I was there, walking on my fours, then I started standing up, then, you know, there was this teacher, and this event, and that event, and, you know, and I learned that, and this happened to me, and this I made happen, and that, and that. And we say, like, well, let's see, could we do without this? A little bit, we could pick it up, you know, after the, you know, around 9:15 when the day finishes, like, well, let me grab it back, you know, and obsess for the rest of the night about me, I'm going there, I was there, I'm not there anymore, where am I going, where will I end, you know. But while practicing, we're trying to not invest so much, we're divesting that. Don't worry, it's been trained, it'll come back. But we're playing with this. We're saying, wow, in this lab, let's see if we could drop this a little bit and become very, like, immediate. Like, what's actually, like, let's get factual about what's happening, you know, here. Oh, there's a body sitting. Oh, it's breathing. And by paying attention kind of very locally, we'll notice that, you know, it breathes by itself. No need for a certain eye to make it breathe and make it beat. And make it, you know, it does that by itself. And as we pay attention, just here, sitting here, that's what I like about this little 45 minutes, we'll notice that it also thinks by itself, doesn't it? Like the famous eye, still to bring it to me. Can I meet this I? You know? I want to not think. I just want to connect, feel what I feel. You know, I just want to hear the sounds. And I just want, like, straight to the queen, straight to the queen, straight to the queen, you know? Tingling, straight to the queen, experiencing tingling, straight to the queen. But no, it keeps commenting. So we might discover along the way that, wow, is it really me? Or is it culture? You know, learned thoughts, you know? Thanks to the magazine, I'm sitting, all the magazines I've looked through, I sit here feeling like shit. I'm not enough because I don't own that or this, or my body's not like this or like that. You know, thanks to 15,000 years of patriarchy, I feel like shit. That I'm identify, any way I identify, I'm probably not enough of that gender or that whatever. And so as we sit here, we'll discover that, you know, it's a little bit like the Wizard of Oz, no? You know, you fear the wizard or whatever, you look for the wizard. And so this remarkable that we can have a little time in our life. Few people will do this. They'll just keep thinking about self, self, self. And here we do something else. We're like, let's go and see if we can meet, if we can find that person. And the Buddha's really good at this. The Buddha's saying like, you know, I'll invite you to just be aware of posture. And through that, being aware of posture, we'll notice that it keeps changing. It's walking, then that is gone, as disappearing. Then it's sitting. Then all of these sensations related to sitting at some point, whoops, they're gone. It's lying. So slowly, over years, maybe just through posture, awareness of the posture of the body, we'll start to discover, reveal the subterfuge. Did that work in English? In French it works well. Révéler le subterfuge. Does that work in English? No? Yeah? Oh yeah, it does. Once again, same language. Two solitudes, but one language. But not so many differences. Two solitude. That's very binary when we know. There's so much more going on. But, yeah. So, very gently, very gradually, that's also something remarkable about it, is that by just paying attention to breath, just being paying attention to the body sitting or standing, or the body doing its activities, just by doing this, we're going to poke little holes in assumptions, preconceived ideas about the solid, essential self to whom all this is happening. We're slowly going to start questioning this. Wow, that's juicy. Whoa, I didn't sign up for that. Excuse me, Pascal, I signed up for a better self. That's my own project. Oh. Well, it'll get better along the way as we dismantle it. And so that's just awareness, mindfulness of body that I've been talking about just in the last few couple of minutes here. So the invitation to just be aware of the breath. Why would we do this? But I think the Buddha had probably many good reasons to have us be aware of the breath, the expansion, contraction of the chest or the belly, or the air coming in and going out, making this slight little pressure as it comes in or out of the nostrils. Why would he invite us to do this when he could have easily, you know, say, no, let's keep obsessing about self. That's a great way to spend your time. For 45 minutes, just keep thinking about yourself. What you could have been, what you should be, how much better you could be, how you will be better at the end of the retreat, or maybe not, maybe it'll be complete failure at that level. Like, that's really good use of time, just self, every time you can. No, it seems like you went another direction. I was like, nope, I invite you to be aware of your breath. Why? I think partly to calm the mind, you know, to unhook the mind from narration, description, storytelling, and other tendencies of mind like this, to to gather the mind and the body together, you know, so I'm not, you know, taking care of business up somewhere else, you know, or telling some, replying to somebody who hasn't said what I'm imagining they could say to me one day, you know. So just to actually, like, gather mind and body here, so to quiet the mind, pay attention to be with the breath, stay with the breath, get intimate with the breath. But also, along the way, to notice the mind, the quality of the mind that is with the breath, you know. Also to notice that the breath happens by itself, and that knowing is flickering, you know. Consciousness is happens and then doesn't happen, and it's not that stable, you know, it keeps changing. Yeah, to notice it's natural, breathing is natural, and the knowing of breathing is also something that is not so much about the I. Knowing a sound, knowing a sensation, is something that happens very naturally in the universe. It doesn't require an I in the middle of this. It's just something natural, very natural, nature. And then the Buddha invites us, yeah, to be aware of the posture. When you're sitting, just know you're sitting. When walking, just know you're walking. No! While walking, I want to think about all the rest of my life. I couldn't care less about walking, Pascal. I care about, you know, the juicy fantasies and worst-case scenarios that I can come up with, you know. This is juicy. There's this invitation, yeah, you can stay with this, but maybe there's something to discover by just being with the body. As it's walking, as it's standing. So I'm reviewing the instructions of the Buddha. Mindfulness, awareness of being there while we're doing daily activities. So I could do all these things habitually while I would keep obsessing about myself later, you know. Could easily, you know, do a number one or two, brush teeth, floss, dress, undress. Could do it with no mindfulness, no presence. While doing this, be able to, you know, think about all kinds of things about the future and me later and me or us. Or if I happen to be codependent, I can just keep thinking about the other. I wonder what the other think, what the other is doing, what the other... You know, I could do all this, doing some kind of selfing, reifying an I. Or by paying attention as I stand, as I get the toothbrush out, as I in daily activities, so this is the instructions. As I do this, I'll be able to notice, you know, the coming and goings of sensation, the coming of goings of moods, the impermanent nature, anicca, the word in Pali, tracking change from Ellen Langer from Harvard, I think, psychologist, researcher. When she says, what is mindfulness? Tracking change in body, tracking change in thoughts, tracking change in moods, tracking change in consciousness. You know? At some point we're somebody who's tasting, knowing taste, tasting something, and this at some point dies. This is gone, finished. And then we're somebody hearing a talk, and this one dies. And later with somebody putting on a boot or jumping into bed, and this one dies. So coming closer to death as we're here, getting acquainted with the disappearing nature of moments of consciousness. So these are the instructions. Be with the body as it's breathing. Be with the body as it's in any posture, or the in-between postures. You know, the four postures, sitting, standing, lying down, or walking. And then the in-betweens too are worthy. As you stand, as you lay down, as you open the door, as you reach, turn the head. Just notice how all these moments are fleeting, fugitive. Could I say it like this? So poking hole through that view that we have slowly constructed. It's a constructed view of a permanent self to whom all of this is happening. And through this very delicate practice, very gradual practice, poking little holes, noticing, oh, I'm not that one anymore that was worried. Now I'm the greedy one wanting to reach the salad. You know, reborn, new life. At some point I'm the generous, benevolent one. And a few seconds later, it's gone. I'm the arrogant, self-righteous now. You know, there was a moment of benevolence, kindness, and then, whoops, it got hijacked. Do you see me, how benevolent I am? No, we're not in benevolence anymore. We're in something else. It just got switched, fluctuated, transformed into something else. Oh, just when I was about to think I was a generous person, now I'm a proud, proud person, or arrogant. You know. There's another powerful instruction. Around the body, mindfulness of the body. So I'm visiting a little bit mindfulness of the body. And the Buddha inviting us to, you know, talking of deconstruction, which is what we're doing. Huh? We're deconstructing our experience into different posture, different activities. Different moments. And one practice that the Buddha taught, I don't know if we'll work with this here this week, we'll see if it happens, but it's good to consider in terms of deconstructing that view of a self. The Buddha talks about this body. Take the one, the local one for you, the local produce for you. That how the body is made of four elements. It's a play. It's a dynamic experience of fire, water, earth, and wind. And so that's a way to practice mindfulness, to be aware of what's happening here. And it's happening now, at this moment. So what is what we call my body? Well, as we pay attention with that kind of framework of the four elements, we'll discover that the my that we put at the beginning of my body is a little, what's the word in English? Presumptuous. Useful, important, one way to talk about what's happening, but certainly not absolutely true. And so as we pay attention to this, we'll discover, just using that framework, there's others, but that framework of the four elements is very powerful. So what's happening here in these bodies? It's a play of water, digestive fire, earth, and air coming in and out, and the air of movement. This is it. It's this archaic framework that is really good to deconstruct that sense of me in the middle of all of this. It's happening to me, it's referring back to me, and it ends with me dying. That's horrible. I don't like that whole deal. It's really shitty. If there's a me and it ends bad like that, then that's an insult. And so wisdom, attention, can bring wisdom, and wisdom can free us from that kind of cage. And I remember sitting on the retreats where sometimes Annie Nugent was teaching, and I really love Annie's style, very precise, few words, said slowly, but very kind of like going straight for it, you know. Sometimes there would be like almost a whole day of silence, and at some point you would hear, you know, something like this, like somebody's about to say something, finally, you know. The whole day of sit, walk, and at some point you hear a little, some sound system, like a tuck, you know, like, oh God, somebody's going to say something. And Annie Nugent would just say, lump of earth. That would be her teaching for the day. Lump of earth. To me, I received that as a direct transmission every time. I was like, whoa. That gives it a whole new perspective. You know, when I was thinking, me, and this is happening to me, and what's going to happen to me, and I'm so like that, and I'm unworthy, and this and that. And then and they're like, just a little lump of earth resting on earth. This is what pretty much what's happening. That's really a good cut through. And so this, she was not naming four, she was naming just one of the elements. That was enough deconstruction to maybe open the mind a bit. It was like, oh, okay, like, whoa, I'm taking all my thoughts really seriously about me and, you know, all these thoughts. How many of these thoughts starts with me or maybe us for you? Or, and a little lump of earth. Sometimes she would be more, almost like more gore. She would say, little lump of flesh. Or little lump of meat. This is what's happening. Ah, okay. I was lost in my creation of the unworthy Pascal who will never get anywhere. Or the better than Pascal, who knows so much better, whatever is your locally grown flavor. That's quite something, no? To actually go and question such amazing, unquestioned assumptions. And this not as an intellectual kind of trip, you know. This completely related to distress, suffering, confusion, ache, brokenness, feeling of separation, fear of death, you know, creation of a disqualified human, you know. That unworthy human or separate human. Imagine we get rid of all that. What's left? has trouble. Ownership. Like the wanting to control how I'm seen, you know, get to own all the money in the world just to prove others that I exist in this way, you know, that I... owning land. So the problem of appropriation, identification, owning, all the suffering that comes from that. So that slight little mistake, the Buddha talks about this using also the element of earth when he says something like, wise beings, they recognize the element of earth. They recognize it, wise being. They recognize earth, element, inside, outside. They recognize the earth element. Honor it, that I'm adding this, but that could be very much in the spirit of it. Honor, they honor the element of earth. The unwise being, they recognize the element of earth, but they go a little further. They go just a little further. Mine. Here or there. They do this. They go a little further. Mine. And all the trouble that ensues and ensues. And so here, by paying attention, we have the chance to clarify what is what. Maybe let go a little bit of that identification, appropriation. Recognize how natural it is. And in this way, heal the relationship with that little lump and the other little lumps and the big turtle island lump. You know, releasing some of the ownership. Where could that lead? You know, an honoring, a recognizing, without appropriation. So it's pretty far out, pretty awesome, I think, because we might come here with, like, I need to fix the rest of my life, you know, like, figure out what I'm going to do about this or that in my life with that view. And then we're like, well, we might not resolve it in this way. We might turn the whole thing upside down. We might, like, change the whole view of what's happening. And that might help resolve a lot of the problems instead of, like, getting very tight around, you know, this or that. Maybe there's another view that could be liberating. Maybe we could disentangle ourselves from the trouble we're in a different way than through that view of happening to me. It's a big kind of revolution. Huh? That's why there's still echoes after 2,500 years of some decades of teaching on this, these practices. So that's what we're playing with here. It's not it's quite something. We're playing with changing our view of what is actually happening, completely in a way, and we do this gradually. So we don't have to buy into this. We don't have to adhere to this. This is not possible. It wouldn't be fitting. The Buddha seems to repeat, see for yourself. I'm going to give you a few tools, a few tricks, a few practices, and see for yourself. See for yourself what is what. What is really happening? Is it really all about you? Or is there another view there? And touching on that view, exploring, revealing that view, what would happen? Sometimes in the teaching, the expression that is used, at least in English, is the sure heart's release. The sure heart's release. The opening of the heart, the joy that can come. Not from owning. That's cheap joy. That's troublesome joy. Another joy that could come from within. The sure heart's release, compassion, could become much more available or spontaneous. Care, consideration, patience, balance, equanimity, peace. By changing that view, at least questioning the one we have now. And how do we do this? Not by obsessing, thinking about it. Don't, it will crack your brain, say the wise ones. Just by paying attention. By paying attention, what's the expression? An open secret. All of this apparently is not hidden. It's not a secret. It's all right in the open. It's only hidden by habits and superficial attention. By paying just a little attention, it will be revealed. It's there. It's not something we make up or add, or it's just something that is there. It's hidden by the lack of attention. So it's unusual to talk this. I'm talking about anatta, this view, this different view. Instead of viewing things through the view of about me, viewing things very differently. Usually, it's the last talk of a retreat. I can't help it. I feel it's too important not to mention, like to have a broader view of what we're working. Like, what's this path? What are we exploring? Then we can go back to the technique and but isn't that interesting to consider this? I think it's worth it. Some would say, never, Pascal, bad teacher. You don't talk about this. You wait until people are all quiet, way down the line. Apparently not. I think it's good. I think it's worth it. I think there's something that we can see into it, get from that says, yeah, that's maybe worth checking out. And so we'll go back to just paying attention to a step. That's the way we do it. Just a step. Being with the body. It's not easy, but it's important. An image that the Buddha uses that is very very strong, very very entertaining image. I don't know if you... So there's the image of the queen bringing the message. The guard bring the message straight to the queen. Does that resonate, this image? Huh? So the message is the actual event, what we call in Dharma language, maybe sometimes the phenomena, a phenomena. So a moment of hearing, a step, a taste. This is a messenger. But we could lose the message. We could never get the message. The message is the message of impermanence that is hidden in the taste. If we take the street of preferences, oh, I like that, I want the recipe, we'd never get the real important message that is in the taste. The real important message is that it disappears. It appears and disappears. The real message of a thought is not its content. It's the fact that it appears and disappears. And so mindfulness only has that capacity to bring that message to consciousness. Otherwise, it's hidden. It's hidden with wanting that, wanting this to stay, wanting to own that, wanting to not be in contact with that. But all of these things are impermanent. That's the core message. And another image, and I'll finish with this. So the Buddha says, imagine there's une fête foraine. I don't know why he said it in French. It's so hard to translate. There's a great gathering in town, you know, like festivities, a festival. Let's say there's a festival. So imagine a festival, huh? How it is. Some people on the site of the festival are walking this way, 3-4 people this way, 4-5 this way, one this way, one like this. One, like the people are, like, some are going towards the food there, some are going back to the car, some are going to the, you know, shoot the ducks. So there's all this going on, you know, like it's a big festival, lots of people. And the Buddha says, imagine there's a beauty queen that is, she won the contest of the best dancer, dancing in the, and, you know, dancing with the veils, or I don't know what. Anyway, so there'll be the beauty queen will be, perform a dance. And so everybody's gathering around to see this, what she does. Apparently it's amazing what she does. She dances with fire. I gotta see. So people are crowding, coming around the beauty queen, and she's gonna actually cross the whole site of the festival from the parking lot to the stage. She'll cross the whole, and there's thousands of people, and they want to see. She'll be dancing with the fire. And imagine this, and you are right behind her. On your head, you have a big pot of boiling oil filled to the brim. And you'll have to follow her and not drop one drop of oil, because behind you there is a guy with a huge sword, and as soon as he sees a drop, he chops your head. This is the image of the Buddha. So she'll be dancing with her fire. You'll be there with your pot of boiling oil full to the brim. And there'll be the thousands of people wanting to see her, and you'll have to follow very close and not drop one drop. If you do, your head will be chopped. And the Buddha says, I use this image, I use this very entertaining image, to talk about mindfulness of the body. How hard it is and how important it is. So let's just take a moment to let these words and images disappear as they do. May we be able to walk this path. May we be able to bring a little attention, generous attention to the body as it's breathing, as it's in its different postures, as it's doing what it does, the different different activities. And may this attention reveal a different vista, disentangling the tangle, and the sure heart's release. Thank you for your consideration. Little announcement. On this retreat, there will be offered small group meetings to talk about practice, maybe ask a question. It doesn't have to take that form at all, but it could be a good place for that. There'll be other opportunities for questions too, but in these groups, it might be just a chance to put into words what's happening, joys and sorrows of the retreat. Name something, an event, maybe something that has happened, and how it was known. Was it known mindfully or mindlessly? No judgments. Something, a little snippet of sitting, a little snippet of walking, a little something, just so we can maybe work at understanding better what is mindfulness, what is the practice. So little sharings, the chance to hear what's happening for others, what they're encountering, discovering, confronted with. And through this, maybe bring understanding to what's happening. And so during the retreat, you could sign, it's going to be a sign-up system. So there's a bunch of opportunities. And you'll be able to sign for one group during the retreat, or two groups during the whole retreat. So either for Wednesday, tomorrow, or Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. There's a few groups happening every day. I'll be present at each of the groups, and maybe offering thoughts, reflections, maybe possible helpful comments. And what's offered here is group meetings. So there's not the possibility to offer individual meetings. There's the possibility to participate to one or two. So even if you see that there's only three people who signed up, you could think, oh, I'll go back. Well, no. It would be helpful to me if you really took what is offered in this retreat. There's good reasons for me saying this, that's what I can offer on this retreat, one or two meetings. So see what's right for you. You could decide to sign right away when we put this up and say, oh, I know I'll want one the last day, or you could decide to see how it unfolds and decide to join at the last minute if you want. If there is a space there, write your name. Questions about this?
I do have a question. I'm not sure I understand. Are you saying that we should wait, maybe sign once, and then if there's still space tomorrow, we can sign for another time?
No, you could even sign your two times. If you say, like, I want one tomorrow and I want one the last day, go ahead and sign. There's enough space for everybody to have two.
Okay.
There's enough space. But not everybody, I think, might not want two. But there's enough space for that. It will happen at the very end of the hallway, or almost at the end. You'll turn right and then turn left. There's a room called 106, I think. It's the classroom, I think it's called. And we'll make a circle there. And so that's where the meeting will happen. And if you come to this meeting promptly, we'll have more time. It's usually during a walking, a 45-minute walking session. So that could be up to 7 people. So it gives you an idea that we'll be able probably to share one thing each that will maybe emerge spontaneously, but that you'll decide or that you'll obsess about from starting now until the moment of the meeting. And the teaching on not self, reveals that it's not exactly a choice. You know, something maybe just kicked in. It's like, oh my God, what am I going to share about? And my whole self-worth suddenly is attached to what I'm going to share about, or maybe not. From my point of view, not at all. Your self-worth is not attached. Like, it's not like you have to bring back some, you know, good mouse, you know, like, I caught that, you know. It's not like this. It's just a chance to hear a little bit. And maybe I'll say more about this, but just now what crosses my mind also is to in recognition of the dynamic nature of what happens, to me, what you will be sharing in the group will be the truth of that moment. Meaning that right after, 10 minutes later, you might think the opposite. Say, actually, no, it's not exactly that. But because there was this sharing, then it, of course, the nuances can come in, or the review can come in, you know. And so it's that dynamic, like the rest, you know. So we won't make this final. We won't make anything final of what is shared. Okay. Bon appétit.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.